Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Kevin! You're stupid.
Hey friends, welcome to episode 506 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. I am your host, Kevin Huntsberger, and this week it is an Ask My 1-2-3 Cents. Got several great questions, some very thought-provoking questions, and I am looking forward to tackling all of those. And as I'm saying this, I remembered that someone actually texted me a question as well, so I'm pulling my phone up and having it ready on standby so I can refer back to that question that came in as well. But as always, I encourage you, if you aren't already, follow the My 1-2-3 Cents Facebook page and join the My 1-2-3 Cents Facebook group. You can get in there and interact with other wrestling fans and talk about fun things. You can also go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcasting app or, of course, at youtube.com/My1-2-3 Cents. If you haven't already done that, I would appreciate you doing so. And check out, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and X, aka Twitter, and keep up with the latest happenings on the My 1-2-3 Cents platforms. Speaking of which, over the weekend, I launched something new called the Huntsberger Chronicles, and it is hamburger reviews of different restaurants. Obviously, I'm going to get more under my belt, but the first one is up. It is at Dale's Burger Shack in Carbondale, Illinois. And my plan is to keep these at, 60 to 90 seconds, snackable content, if you will. Sam Banks, thanks for that reference as you watched it on YouTube and left that comment about the video. But yeah, that's the plan. I'm adding different content. It's not all going to be wrestling content on the YouTube channel. Just kind of branching out and trying some different things. We'll see how it goes, but I'm having fun doing the burger stuff because I've been a fan of burgers since before I can remember. And many, many years ago, a coworker of mine convinced a local restaurant that is no longer around to create a Kevin Huntsberger. And so I was playing off of that and having some fun with it. So again, check it out. It is the Huntsberger Chronicles on YouTube and on my TikTok channel. That's at Kevin_Huntsberger if you're interested in following along with that. And I do post a lot of wrestling stuff there as well. Try to post different things, but it doesn't always work out. So you'll see some of the same things on TikTok and on the YouTube channel or even sometimes on Instagram. But I try to change things up and make things different on those platforms to give people something different to watch and look at every time that they're on. So since I am doing an Ask My 1-2-3 Cents, I put the question out there earlier in the week and said if anyone had any questions to fire away. And Chad, of course, asks, why is he never included in the Ask My 1-2-3 Cents episodes? Chad is always a frequent guest, co-host. I guess co-host would be a better word, not guest. And the answer, and I think Chad's questions, many of them were sarcastic, and I get it, but the reason that I do Ask My 1-2-3 Cents is because it's easy content when I don't have a co-host. So basically, if I don't have anyone or if I don't have a topic specific that I want to talk about, I do an Ask My 1-2-3 Cents because you guys, the listeners and the followers of the social media channels, come up with some great questions and you all become kind of that co-host of sorts, even though it's just me regurgitating your questions. But it just makes it easier for me to put something together and have something fresh and new for that Monday morning drop, which happens every Monday and has for almost 10 years now. So, Chad, in the future, if you want to be a part of an Ask My 123 Cents podcast, we'll get together and do one where we field questions and maybe have some debates, because you actually asked another question about what makes a wrestling company an independent. And you, in your comment, said that technically speaking, WWE should have been considered a, or should WWE have been considered an independent company because it was family owned until the recent sale to TKO. The short answer, because you also in the question mentioned maybe having a longer conversation about this. So we will talk more about this in the future, the near future, to be exact. But the short answer for me is no, WWE for a very long time should not have been ever considered an independent company, even though it's family owned. By that standard, you know, AEW should be considered an independent company, and I don't consider AEW an independent company either. My reasoning, my logic behind that, I think if you are on national TV, cable especially, that's no longer, I think your coverage area precludes or you know, makes you whether you're an independent company or not. We'll talk more about this though, and I want to hear your guys' thoughts and insight on this too. What do you think makes a wrestling company an independent versus you know, a big league company, for lack of a better word? We'll break it more down in that episode when we do it in a few weeks. I can promise you that. Chad also asked if the WWE should recreate Land of a Thousand Dances with the current staff or the current roster. Hell yes. I loved the first wrestling album, the second wrestling album. You know, Land of a Thousand Dances was on that first album. If You Only Knew was the group song that they did on the second album. And Chad and I are going to break these down too at some point with Music Mania. I know we keep talking about Music Mania and we've done a couple, but I really want to dive into those albums and those songs. I think it's probably the nostalgia talking more than anything. Could they pull it off today? I certainly think they could. They're not as gimmicked, the company is, that is, with characters as they were in the 80s. Would it be the same? Obviously not, but I think that it could be fun. Although the internet wrestling community is going to crap all over it, no matter what, you know, if they do it or not, that it won't live up to the 80s standards, if you will, or that it won't, you know, that they're making a mockery of wrestling and, you know, only the best wrestle here. Sorry, that's my one and only jab at AEW, because I do have AEW questions that I will be getting to, and I will be talking more about those in a favorable environment in just a few minutes. You might see behind me, if you're watching on YouTube, there's a Golden Girls cutout of the four Golden Girls, and I put that out today because it was a gift from Chad, but it's also part of Chad's questions this week. What's my favorite episode of the Golden Girls? You know, growing up in the 80s, I was a fan of all kinds of sitcoms, and Golden Girls is definitely in my top five of favorite sitcoms from the 80s. And I still enjoy going back from time to time and watching those episodes. He asked what my favorite episode is, and that was kind of hard to isolate and figure out. But as I thought about it and I kind of looked and watched a few just to kind of jog my memory, the episode called Old Friends, it was back in season three in 1987. It's the episode where Sophia befriends a man at the beach who has Alzheimer's disease, and she doesn't know that at the beginning. And it's also the episode where Rose loses her teddy bear, her childhood teddy bear. Blanche, I think it was Blanche, accidentally gives it away in a yard sale or a thrift sale, rummage sale at a church or something. And so Rose tries to get it back, and she outsmarts the little Girl Scout, Sunshine Cadet, in the episode. I think that's how the setup is for it is, but I know she loses her teddy bear somehow and ends up getting it back. And the way she kind of outsmarts this kid, to me was kind of funny, because Rose was always kind of dubbed as the dingy blonde. And so being able to kind of pull that off, I thought it was humorous. And so they took some humor with that, but also a very serious episode of Alzheimer's and watching our parents get older and that aging process and then having to make those tough decisions, which is what the character that Sophia had befriended, what his daughter was faced with making decisions, and he eventually moved away. So it's a good episode, but really there are very few that are not good episodes, in my opinion, of the Golden Girls. Kevin McCleary asks, why no referees ever as guests on the podcast? Well, Kevin, once upon a time, Lane Austin, who folks may remember from the Stride Pro Wrestling days, he was on the podcast. We talked all about the Macho Man Randy Savage, one of his all-time favorites. And Kevin, we've talked before about you being on the podcast, and we're going to make that happen too here sooner rather than later. Definitely within the next couple of months, I'm going to get you. We'll sit down and talk and figure out schedules and what works best. But I definitely want to have you on the show because you have seen a lot in your few years as an independent wrestling referee, and I know you're still doing your thing with the other companies that are out there and going on right now. And for the life of me, No Fold Wrestling is one of the companies. And God, I apologize. This is not on purpose. I swear, I am drawing a blank. This is part of the aging process. Ignite Pro Wrestling, the other company that they run shows in Heron. And I know there's a show coming to the Williamson County Fairgrounds in August 7th, I believe is the date. Tyler Heath Hatton and Curly are teaming up at that. This is a company coming in from out of town, though. I'm not sure. I don't have it pulled up in front of me, but Kevin, yeah, definitely want to have you on the podcast, and we will talk wrestling very, very soon. Dan Corley asks, and this is the AEW portion of the show, on a scale from 1 to 10, what do I give Blood and Guts? And I don't know if he's talking about, I'm assuming he's talking about just the match. Listen, I've talked about this before. I don't have cable, and I don't have a way to stream AEW live other than if I'm flipping through TikTok and someone's watching it and has it on, and I have watched it that way before. I always go back and watch clips, you know, highlight reels on whether it's YouTube or whether it's on TikTok or Instagram. Usually it's Instagram or Twitter or X that I see those clips. But I intentionally went back and found, it was like a 9-minute highlight reel from Blood and Guts. It was the whole, or not the whole, you know, 9 minutes, obviously. They showed a bunch of highlights from the match itself, Blood and Guts match, but then also the undercard. Some real quick thoughts. You know, MJF, I think, is great as a heel. I'm glad that he came back and is working as a heel as opposed to being a face. To me, it just didn't feel as genuine and didn't work as well. I loved how they did the unveil of the American Championship instead of, I think it would, I don't even, here's my one nitpick on AEW is there are so many damn titles. And now when you have these other companies, you know, Ring of Honor and CMLL and New Japan, and I think they're incorporating some of those belts into the mix as well. It makes for confusing a casual fan of that product like myself. So a nitpick, a criticism, but again, it's not, you know, I'm not trying to be overly critical of the product. I know that they are still working on getting that audience, getting that traction. And I don't, you know, my biggest problem with AEW, which I guess could also be a problem with WWE, is the fans turn things into, you know, it has become tribal. And I think the big part of that, and this again, quick little rant, Tony Khan. If Tony Khan would just stick to tweeting about AEW and staying in his own lane and not trying to incorporate so much of WWE into his thought process, to me, it would be a more enjoyable experience. Because Chad and I have talked before about, you know, on this podcast about how growing up we watched Mid-South and AWA and WWF and the NWA, Jim Crockett Promotions. And, you know, we loved it all. But part of that was because Vince McMahon wasn't complaining about Jim Crockett Promotions or comparing himself to Bill Watts, and Vern Gagne was, you know, and if they were, they weren't doing it in an obnoxious way that we've kind of seen over the last few years with Tony Khan. So that's my only criticism. If I'm giving the cage match itself a rating on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd probably give it a 6. The action was fine. I don't like, and I've said this publicly before, whether it's WWE, whether it was, Stride Pro Wrestling, no matter what the company, I am not a fan of the blood and the weapons. I'm just not. I grew up in the 80s era where it was a little bit more over the top and cartoonish. And I don't need to see somebody getting hit with a staple gun or a light tube or thumbtacks thrown into their mouth or, slice and dice. That's just not me. And I know there is an audience out there. There is a niche for it. There are fans of it. And I have the utmost respect for the men and women that get in there and do that and take that risk. But man, I will tell you, I cringed a lot during that 9-minute highlight reel. And, just probably 3 or 4 minutes of that was the cage match itself. It just is not my cup of tea. And so, and I don't need all the blood, but I know obviously to have a match like that, you have to have blood. And, WWE has been criticized for having Hell in a Cell and nobody bleeds. So I get it. I think that there is a expectation from the fans when you have a cage match or a gimmick match or a match of those kinds of consequences that you're going to see some kind of blood at some point during the course of the match. And so we got that. And I'm guessing, and someone will correct me if I'm wrong, that the basic rules of the blood and guts match is similar to War Games. It seemed like they were coming in every, and I don't know what the time increments were, because again, watching the highlights, it was just much more fast paced. It seemed like there was also a lot of outside stories going on, because I don't know all of the inner workings of every story going into that match. Jeff Jarrett earlier in the night, was talking about Bryan Danielson, came to him. I hope that with All In, Bryan's getting that title match. I don't know if Jeff Jarrett's going to be involved, because I think he's got a side story going on now with Hangman Adam Page. It seems like I'd keep Jeff Jarrett a heel too. I love him so much better as a bad guy. Back even from those early days in the WWF, 30 years ago when he was JEFF, JARRETT. I did a Jeff Jarrett appreciation podcast a couple of weeks ago. I love Jeff Jarrett, but I kind of hope that, because Daniel Bryan has talked about winding down his career. I love Daniel Bryan. He's probably my favorite, top three favorites on AEW right now. But I would almost like to see Jeff Jarrett screw Daniel Bryan. And it kind of feels like they're heading that way. But again, I think the 90s have conditioned us to be suspect of everyone and everyone's motives and intentions. Because I also think on the flip side that Dominic is going to turn on Rhea Ripley at SummerSlam and cost her the match against Liv Morgan. So again, conspiracy theorist, but I think it's very plausible and we could see that happen. But getting back to, the night, the blood and guts, a solid 6 out of 10. And again, it's more because of the excessive, and maybe it wasn't excessive to other fans, but to me, it was a little much with the staple gun, especially, just not my bag. And I didn't like the way it ended. I didn't like the way that they handcuffed Jungle Jack Perry or Jungle Boy Jack Perry or whatever his name is now. The scapegoat, and then doused him in the gasoline Darby Allin did and threatened to light it. And then they just quit like that. To me, that was a weak finish, but it is what it is. It's pro wrestling and it's subjective and not everything is going to fit everybody's taste. And I can understand and respect that for sure. Dan Corley also asks about a future world title match between Bron Breakker and I'm going to butcher this guy's name, and I apologize, because again, I'm not watching as much as I should be. Draganovic, I'm I apologize, and I meant to go back and listen to it before I started this podcast. Bron Breakker, no doubt in my mind, is the future of WWE. You know, I think that people are critical of his loss recently to Sami Zayn. I think that gets made up for at SummerSlam, and then I think we're going to see a holy terror. And I don't think he'll win the world title. He may not even win it in 2025, but I think in the next 2 years, he is the top dog and is going to be sitting pretty in WWE for a long time to come. And God, and I'm sorry, I cannot say the guy's name. Draganovich, I think, is what, or Dragunov. I don't know. I'm sorry. And this is no slight against him. I think that he has a lot of talent as well. And I don't see as bright a future for him, but I do definitely think that he could be a contender and fighting Bron Breakker for that world heavyweight title in the next few years. Again, I don't think it's going to happen in 25. It may not even happen in 26, but I think by 27, Bron Breakker is shattered anything that's in front of him. And it may be sooner than that, but you know, I do think it takes special talents to get to the top of the mountain. We've seen exceptions to that rule, and I think they're taking their time intentionally with Bron Breakker, which is a good thing, because you don't want to do the Roman Reigns treatment that we got 10 years ago where it was too much, and then the fans hated him, and then they turned him into the tribal chief, and things went much better in that regard. But we'll see. And Roman, I'm sure, will be back. Some are saying at SummerSlam. I don't know that it's going to be that soon. I guess this is kind of the SummerSlam go-home show too. I hope that it's not SummerSlam, but I also think that the Bloodline in its current form is not as pristine as it was prior to Roman's departure and whatnot. They're trying, and I think it's still just kind of learning these new members of the Bloodline and getting, because on the independent scene, Jacob Fatu, of course, was highly touted and well respected, and I think that's coming in WWE, but it takes time on that global audience to get the casual fan like me, who I, you know, never saw MLW with Jacob Fatu, so I'm learning more along the way as well. Want to get to a question from Zach Whitecotton, who sent this one in via text. Since SummerSlam is a week away, how was the summer and spring angle in 1991 of Sergeant Slaughter being an Iraqi dude seen by the people in their early teens? Myself, I hated him simply because I didn't know any better because I was only 7 years old. So in spring and summer of 91, I was graduating from high school. So I was 18 years old. Had been a fan for probably 7 or 8 years at that point. Was a fan of Sergeant Slaughter when he first was the G.I. Joe, Real American Hero. Then he came back in the late summer of 1990 as where the United States is going head-to-head and defending Kuwait, and things were kind of coming to a head in the Middle East. You know, by fall of 90, we're seeing Sergeant Slaughter as a full-blown heel Iraqi sympathizer. There's a real threat of war in our country. I remember, again, I'm 17 at that time, and thinking that when I turn 18, that there's a chance that I get drafted. And I was scared. I'll be honest with you. I did not want to go to war, and I didn't want to see our country at war. For, you know, selfish reasons of not wanting to be in that position, and also to not see other men and women, you know, die as a result of this. So I remember there being a lot of nervousness going into that. And then, of course, in January of 91, the strikes happen. Desert Storm is underway, and Sergeant Slaughter wins the WWF Championship. And it's weird to me because I think that may be one of the very few times that I can think of, at least, that world events, you know, WWE was taking a page and following that closely world events going on, because had we not gone to war, had that never happened, I'm curious what would have happened with the Ultimate Warrior's title reign. Would we have gotten Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior again at WrestleMania 7? I don't know. But Warrior loses the belt to Slaughter, and then Slaughter subsequently drops it to Hulk Hogan. And then getting to more of Zach's question, you know, what were we thinking leading up to SummerSlam? Because the match made in hell, you know, we had the match made in heaven where Randy Savage and Elizabeth were going to get married at SummerSlam. And then we had the match made in hell where it was nuptials turned to napalm. That was Vince McMahon's tagline on that, where the wedding happens. And then we're going to get this handicap tag match of Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior against Sergeant Slaughter, Colonel Mustafa, who was the Iron Sheik, and General Adnan. So really, I, you know, as an 18-year-old now at this point, I'm looking at this as a weak-ass main event because, one, the war was over in Iraq. You know, the Desert Storm stuff was done, and Slaughter was still this Iraqi sympathizer. They had brought in Iron Sheik to be Mustafa. And Iron Sheik, I love Iron Sheik. I love him to this day. But by that point in his career, he was not main event material. He should not have been main eventing the second or third biggest pay-per-view of the year. And General Adnan was a manager who had wrestled, but, you know, I think he's in his 50s at this point. And Sergeant Slaughter, let's face it, was well past his prime, even when he won the championship, and it was all done in this effort to build in on world events. I thought a different direction that they were going to go, because also happening that summer is the Undertaker locking the Ultimate Warrior in that casket during the funeral parlor. And we also then have Jake the Snake Roberts, who is trying to help the Undertaker, or I'm sorry, help the Ultimate Warrior face his fears and go up against the Undertaker. But then he turns on the Warrior as well. So I thought we were going to get, if we're going to do a tag match, I was hoping for either A, take out Mustafa, or I'm sorry, take out General Adnan and put the Undertaker in Sergeant Slaughter's place, or I thought a better option was going to be Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior against Undertaker and Jake the Snake Roberts. Or it could have just been Hogan versus Undertaker and Jake versus Warrior. We can get any of that. And to me, those would have been better matches than what we got. And then you also have Sid Justice, who is there. So why not then? It could have been a six-man tag affair where it's Hogan, Warrior, and Sid against Jake, Undertaker, and Sergeant Slaughter. I think that would have even been a better match. You know, you had this gigantic being in Sid as the special guest referee, and I don't know, it just all felt, and then there was rumblings that Ric Flair was coming in. I think they actually speak of Ric Flair during the course of SummerSlam. So there was so much else going on that main event was dated before it was even made, in my opinion. And so, yeah, I thought it was weak. I love the nostalgia of it still, obviously, but I did not like that main event at all for SummerSlam. And again, I felt like Warrior was still kind of riding, or not riding on, but like still being forced to kind of be in Hulk Hogan's shadow. And I get it, Hulk Hogan cast a huge shadow, but I didn't care much for that at all. You know, looking back in my 18-year-old self, and now as 51-year-old, I definitely did not like it. And I think that there were other talents, because Snake and Undertaker were infused into the Randy Savage storyline with the wedding reception. So that kind of built that feud up with Jake and Macho Man. But I think that there could have been other things done. And we know, of course, famously that the Warrior left immediately after SummerSlam and was, I guess, technically fired, and then didn't come back until WrestleMania 8, 6, 7, 8, 9 months later. So, yeah, I thought it was kind of weak. But again, I thought that whole Iraqi angle, I just didn't care much for it, the Iraqi sympathizer. We're going to wrap up with my old friend, Brian Barnett. Oh, before we do that, though, I do want to remind you, if you haven't already, this is the final week. There's just a few days left, actually. July 31st is the last day to get an entry into the raffle for the giveaway. We've got autographs. We've got a T-shirt, some other little things Chad sent from Pro Wrestling Crate. So check out the pinned post on the My123Cents Facebook page for more details on that. And Brian asks a handful of questions here at the end, and I'm slipping back into my glasses here so I can see these. Who would I have brought in, or who would I have liked to have seen be brought in to the 1980s during the height of Hulkamania to feud with Hulk Hogan? Great question. And, I blogged about this years ago, WrestleMania 2. I would have, and it was a series that I called Instead Of. And I had proposed the idea, and others have talked about this before and since and after, about Bruiser Brody, King Kong Brody, coming in to the WWF and facing Hulk Hogan. And I know there were a lot of issues with Brody kind of being a loose cannon, and would he have worked with Vince McMahon and followed the protocol and the rules and the way things were in the WWF at that time. And I think most of us agree, based on his free spirit and his sense of adventure and wildness, that Brody probably would not have been a good fit. But I think he would have been a great opponent for Hulk Hogan, whether it would have been at WrestleMania or just kind of a feuding throughout. This would have been, to me, a much more sound opponent for Hogan than King Kong Bundy, or, even some of the other big men that Hogan feuded with and faced. I think Brody could have come in there. And I think, though, there might have been even a risk of Brody being too popular. He was, I know he went back and forth between face and heel, but I can remember watching him wrestle Ric Flair and, the fans obviously loving him because it's, wrestling Ric Flair, his feud against Abdullah the Butcher. And, but then he feuded with Greg Gagne and Vern Gagne and some of those guys in the AWA. I think that Brody would definitely be my number one pick to have come in and had a program, even if a couple of matches with Hulk Hogan. I don't know if Brody, because back in that era, it was a monster factory or a heel factory for feeding Hogan. I don't know how Brody would have felt about that, but it would have certainly been entertaining to see that happen. Someone else that I would have put in there, probably in late 85, mid to late 85, would have been Nikita Koloff. Imagine him jumping from Jim Crockett Promotions to the WWF. I think he was this big badass Russian. And of course, this is the time when Hogan's wrestling the likes of Nikolai Volkov and the Iron Sheik. And we have these foreign, the Soviet threat. Nikita was still a nasty heel in Jim Crockett Promotions at that time. And it wasn't until late 86 when he turned and joined Dusty Rhodes as the Allied Powers. But man, I think that Nikita coming in, even if he becomes the WrestleMania 6 opponent, because it's still, we're still, those tensions were running wild. But Nikita would have been an amazing addition to the roster, the WWF roster, back in the mid 80s, and coming in and tearing off Hogan's head with one of those Russian sickles, covering him up with the flag, the Russian flag, and then, leading up to WrestleMania, man, would have been the thing that drove fans insane. And Nikita was pretty good. I think that, he would have been a more formidable, bigger threat than a Nikolai Volkov or Iron Sheik would have been in those days as well. Brian also wants to know, what are my thoughts on Timeless Toni Storm? I think that, in my opinion, Toni Storm, the story going on with her and Mariah May, is the best thing going on in AEW right now. They have put a very bright spotlight, pun intended, on women's wrestling in that regard. And I think that has also led to, now it feels like the TNT, or is it the TBS? I think it's the TBS championship with Mercedes Moné and Dr. Britt Baker. I feel like that feud has gotten a little more intensified now as well, because you've got a great spotlight going on women's wrestling in AEW. It's not always been great, but I think it is getting better. And I do think, I loved how they did the whole turn with Mariah. And I know that there was some criticism about the blood and the, and in that case, and in that circumstance, and I know I'm contradicting what I said earlier, that worked. You know, watch the shoe, and then she uses the shoe and pulverizes Toni Storm with it. I think that Toni Storm has really gotten outside of her comfort zone and is doing things. You know, in WWE, she was just, I think, another name and face. She's one of the talents, I think, that has gone to AEW, that AEW has truly utilized and maximized their minutes on, and it's been incredible. And so I am so excited to see what happens at Wembley coming up. And I love the fact that they kind of keep her in that black and white, and then they bring in the color. The new figure that that Jazz wears is releasing. It was unveiled at San Diego Comic-Con over the week. The figure is in black and white. I think it's really, to me, it's awesome. I do enjoy it. And I think, again, that she is one of the better things about the story with Mariah May is definitely the best thing going in AEW. But I think that both of these women deserve kudos and a big round of applause for what they're doing, not just for women's wrestling in AEW, but for AEW in general. So I speak very highly of both of them. Let's see. He also, Brian asks, who is the greatest masked wrestler of all time? I think the easy answer here is Rey Mysterio. I can't think of someone who has had, at least in the last 20 years, I can't think of anyone who has had the influence or the career that Rey Mysterio has had under a mask. Is he my favorite masked wrestler? No, I like Rey Mysterio. I think that he has done a lot, not just for Lucha Libre, but for wrestling in general. And I think that he continues to be an example and a role model. He's a one-of-a-kind, unique talent. Even back in those WCW days, ECW days when I first saw him, and then coming into WCW now, of course, being a leader in WWE. I just think that he has inspired a generation of talent, and the marketability of Rey Mysterio, the masks. My kid, when he was watching wrestling, Rey was one of his favorites. Had Rey Mysterio mask and all that kind of stuff. So I would probably go with Rey. I liked Mankind with the mask. I know that it's not your traditional mask, but I thought that he was a great masked wrestler as well. And I've done an episode on masked wrestlers in the archive, so check that out as well. But yeah, I think Rey definitely is up there. If he's not the greatest, he's got to be one of the all-time greats under the mask. And I want to know your guys' answers to these questions as well. So feel free to leave a review of the podcast and throw in some of your opinions, your 1-2-3 cents, if you will, as well. Brian's last question is, if I could only watch the matches from three wrestlers, past or present, who would they be? And he says that I can kind of tag team as a wrestler, but I think I'm going to go with singles. And I'm using guys that I feel like, not necessarily, I guess these are some of my favorites as well, but then, you can get matches that they had with others that will be able to then see the matches of others along the way. And that would be the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, Stone Cold, Steve Austin. And my third pick, I kind of debated and wasn't sure who to pick, but I think I'm going to go with the Macho Man, Randy Savage. And then you're going to be able to see all kinds of great matches, because those three guys had great opponents, from Bret Hart and Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior and Rick Rude and all of these other great talents that were along the way that we'd be able to enjoy. So those are my three: Ric Flair, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and the Macho Man, Randy Savage, who, by the way, I'm wearing today on my shirt. But that is going to do it for this week's episode. I want to again thank everyone who asked a question. And I also want to thank you for watching and or listening to this week's episode. Have a great week, and we will talk again soon.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.